Imagine, if you will, that you're sitting under a tree, not in the bleak midwinter, but in rather more clement conditions. It's a pleasant day, and there you are, minding your own business and not unduly straining the grey cells, when all of a sudden a friend comes bounding up to you and tells you he's discovered the meaning of life. Your enthusiasm about this news is limited to a rather doubtful grunt. And then he says he wants you to come and meet him. Meet him? The meaning of life is a person? Well, you're not convinced that this is how you want to spend the afternoon, but there's a certain Winnie the Pooh-like charm to your friend's enthusiasm. So you leave the shelter of your tree and set out on an expedition to find the meaning of life. And it turns out that the meaning of life spots you coming well before you've spotted him. And that even before he has exchanged any words with you, he knows more about you than you're really comfortable with. And when you ask him how he knows it all, he doesn't really answer the question. Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. And he follows that up with these enigmatic words. You will see greater things than these. Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. And you might find yourself wondering what he's on about. You might even find yourself wondering what he's on. And you might find yourself thinking that you were really better off back under your tree, minding your own business. Or just possibly, you might be intrigued enough to want to know more. I'm hoping that might be the case for you this evening, because I intend to take those words as my text this evening. You will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. You may not realize it yet, but it's got Christmas written all over it. In our imagination, we've been trying to put ourselves in the shoes of that man under the tree. But it's hard to imagine ourselves in someone else's shoes if we don't know the first thing about them. So let me tell you that this man has a name, Nathanael. And he does have a head start on us in understanding those rather obscure words. He was one of the people of Israel, brought up in and shaped by the same cultural and religious background as the person who spoke the words. So some of the things that make no sense to us or just seem weird and outlandish will have resonated with him. Take angels, not exactly a common topic at a Stammtisch. But Nathanael will have known that these were heavenly beings who were constantly at work looking after God's people and carrying out God's purposes. So he won't have been fazed by this idea of streams of angels going up and down as if they were on a celestial escalator. And nor will he have been completely in the dark about this reference to a son of man. In both Greek and Hebrew, that could simply mean a human being. But it really meant not a mere human, but someone who was human in the fullest expression of true humanity. And for the people of Israel, it had come to mean even more than that. A human being who'd been given full divine authority. Fully human, but also with this full divine authority. And it's not just individual words in that verse which will have meant more to him than to us. The verse as a whole will have resonated with him in a way it doesn't with us. It's an echo from an incident in the life of Jacob. Jacob, son of Isaac, grandson of Abraham, a man from whom all the people of Israel were descended. But as a young man, Jacob was a bit of a dodgy cove, as we say in English. Nicht besonders vertrauenswürdig. His speciality was scams against his own family members. He got his father to give him what his older brother should have got, thus deceiving his father and cheating his brother in one go. His brother Esau wasn't too chuffed and threatened his life, so he fled on a long journey east to his uncle Laban. Uncle Laban gave him a job with the flocks and was a little surprised after a few years to discover that somehow Jacob had ended up with more flocks than Laban had. But the incident that is of interest to us occurs while he is fleeing from his brother's murderous rage. Jacob is on his own, traveling light and sleeping rough. And one night he lies down with a stone as a pillow and has a rather bizarre dream. It's only brief, so I'll read it to you. Behold, he dreamed, and behold, there was a ladder set up on the earth. Ladder could also be a staircase, take your pick. And the top of it reached to heaven. And behold, the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east, and to the north and to the south. And in you and your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Well, what would that dream have meant to Jacob? We don't have to guess, because he pretty much tells us. Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Das Tor zum Himmel. So he knows that he's on holy ground. The Lord has paid a visit. He uses the word awesome in its rather unusual but in this original sense there. And that's why he calls the place the house of God. Even though there's no actual building here, this is the place where God is present. He calls it the house of God. More interesting for us is the other way he describes the place, the gate of heaven. A gate implies the existence of a barrier. You find a gate in a fence or a wall that marks a boundary between two properties or between public land and private land. The fence or the wall is there as a barrier. It's to stop you getting from one to the other. Sometimes it may be very well guarded, barbed wire on top and so on. Sometimes hardly guarded at all. For the people of Israel, the most important such boundary was the boundary between God and man. Wherever God was present, barriers had to be set up to prevent any human being making the fatal mistake. For sinful man to wander into the presence of the holy God could lead to only one outcome, instant death. The two worlds, divine and human, had to be kept apart at all costs. So wherever God was present, barriers were erected. The temple, the house of God, is the most famous example, full of barriers to make sure you didn't get into the holiest place where God dwelt. So listen to Jacob's words again with that in mind. This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. He sees that there is a gate in the boundary wall between these two worlds. That's what that ladder is all about, with the angels on it. One end is in heaven, where the Lord is speaking. The other end of the ladder or staircase is on the earth, with the angels moving back and forth between the two, as on a bridge. And in his dream, he has witnessed a meeting of these two worlds. It's almost as if the boundaries have been dissolved between the divine and the human realms, or at least suspended. The gate into God's realm, the gate into God's presence, was wide open. But it was only a dream. Whether it reflected reality at that moment or not, we cannot say. At the most, it was a brief opening of that usual boundary between heaven and earth, between the metaphysical and the material world. A fleeting glimpse of what might be if it weren't for human sin. So much for Jacob and his dream. What about Nathanael? What will these words in the New Testament have meant to him? Well, remember, he too was one of the people of Israel, so he had a similar religious and cultural background. What will have been going through his mind as he hears these echoes? This time we have to presume it a bit because we're not actually told. But he'll have known of Jacob's dream and Jacob's conclusions, that it had been a meeting place, a gate of heaven, where the usual boundaries between earth and heaven had been suspended. There's really only one significant difference between the dream back then and the description we have now, heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. One difference, but a profound difference. Nothing is said to Nathanael about the ladder or the staircase which formed that gate to heaven, the point where the two worlds met. So what is it that the angels are going up and down on? Well, it's not a staircase or a celestial escalator. Listen carefully again. The angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. The Son of Man. Remember that figure who expresses the fullness of what humanity is meant to be? He is now the gate of heaven, the place where heaven and earth may meet. Where Nathanael's ancestors had to go to a particular place to meet with God, to the temple, his generation will have it easier, for a while at least. They won't need to journey to a place to meet with God. They'll be able to approach a person and meet with God. Any one of them who wanted to meet God would be able to do so by going to the one in whom the two worlds meet. That's what John, the writer, was meaning with words we're going to hear in a few minutes. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. We've seen something of the heavenly here in the earthly. God has become visible, touchable, knowable. And of course, the person speaking to Nathanael is the Son of Man himself, the fullest and most complete expression of humanity, but also the fullness of God in human flesh. To be fair to Nathanael's friend who fetches him, he didn't in so many words describe the person he had met as the meaning of life. I put those words in his mouth. But he could have said that. And if he had, he'd have been spot on. In this meeting place between God and man, we find the meaning of our lives. And if all that is true, then at least two practical things follow. Many religions say, if you want to find God, go to that place at that time. And Jesus says, if you want to find God, come to me. Most religions say, if you want to enjoy God's favor, do these actions or ceremonies or rituals. And Jesus says, if you want to enjoy God's favor, then it doesn't start with doing. It starts with meeting. Meeting with me so that you may come to know God through me. And of course, there's much more to it than that. Easter followed Christmas. And at that point, the boundaries were not just suspended, they were abolished. The curtain in the temple separating humankind from the Holy of Holies was torn in two. But one thing at a time. For now we celebrate Christmas, where the gate was opened, when heaven and earth, the divine and the human, first met and kissed as the child was born in the stable. John puts it better than I can. We'll hear now the famous prologue to John's Gospel, which in one sense you could say is a description of the dissolving of the boundaries between heaven and earth as the Son of Man appears.
When glory dwelt among us, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me.' And from the fullness, from his fullness, we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. The only Son who is at the Father's side, He has made him known.